I'm rolling.
Man, that's a deep sigh even before the music comes. I don't know if you guys can hear that one. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl.
And I'm Molly Wood. I feel like we should warn you now that we're recording on a Monday, in case you heard that deep sigh.
Yes, yes. Welcome to Making Smart, which is, as all y'all know, that's in honor of the Super Bowl being in Atlanta, where I went to school. Anyway, all y'all know, none of us is as smart as all of us. All y'all.
That's right. We're going to do this together like we always do. Today, this is actually going to be pretty fun. I'm super excited. We're going to talk about memes. Memes. I know some of you are thinking, I already know what a meme is. And some of you are thinking, oh, thank God, because I totally don't. So
we should
say we're talking about little viral images. And mostly it is pictures with some sort of funny caption attached, right? That the kind that you see everywhere online, they spin into different iterations to eventually go viral. It might be the grumpy cat with a funny caption. It might be somebody having a hilarious response. Recently, without any captions whatsoever, it was an egg. On Instagram.
Which is like worth $10 million now. It's crazy.
Which is now worth $10 million. Exactly. Like it is.
Which is part of why we're doing this.
Uh-huh. Boom. And all of this has evolved into a language, like unto itself. In fact, there's a teeny tiny part of me that wants to like call a linguist and find out about how now we're just going to communicate in picture form. But they spread this information. They comment on this item. I'm just going to throw in a possible other show. In either a fun way or not a fun way, maybe it's a political way because memes are popular and an easy way to spread information, or maybe it's a branded way, as we see increasingly.
Maybe, or kind of mostly, because holy cow, they are a good way to make money. They're marketing tools, and they are just, there's a little bit of me that wants to go, hey, you kids, get off my lawn, but we're going to save that for the interview that we're going to do in about 2 minutes. So here's a really good one, right? That Netflix movie Bird Box, which took me forever to figure out what was going on the Sandra Bullock thing, where she's blindfolded. Netflix says 80 million people watched it, despite the reviews being meh, which seems like a lot of people. But it turns out they watched it because they wanted to understand and perhaps participate in the memes that were all over Twitter, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit.
Totally. Apple's AirPods have been a huge meme recently. And in fact, there's an article that traces how if you searched for AirPod memes in early December 2018, there weren't that many hits. But then by the end of December, how conveniently, there were tons of hits for AirPod memes, so much so that they're basically sold out all over the place. So that's obviously what works for brands. And then there's advertising revenue or sponsored content on meme accounts. Like you can get paid as a poster, I don't know, $2,000 a post, $15,000 a post by a brand to post sponsored content on your meme account with millions of followers. So the point is here, there's a lot of money behind this. I know we're doing it all wrong, Kai.
I'm really completely wrong.
That's what I think every
bananas.
Time.
Bananas. Like,
why are we working so hard? Why? To learn more about this, we have an expert in studio. Matt Shimkowitz is in LA. I'm not there. Kai and Matt are just hanging out. They're going to just like have a really fun time talking to each other. Matt is senior editor of knowyourmeme.com. Matt, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So look, I'm going to start here, even though I usually let Molly start, but you're sitting right in front of me, so I'm going to get back to the whole, hey, you kids, get off my lawn thing. No, I'm not. We're going to get to that later. First of all, you're the expert. Did we characterize memes correctly?
Yeah, that was pretty good.
Okay.
Right. That's about how I would describe it at last year's Christmas parties to all the relatives. That's about it.
So when grandma says, Matt, what do you do?
Yeah.
And you say,
oh,
grandma,
sit
look,
down.
I work at knowyourmemes.com. And she says, huh?
Usually I just say, I work on the internet.
Oh, my God. That's funny. Okay. So a substantive question. I want to lay some groundwork here, right? Internet's been around for a little while. How long have memes been like a thing?
Well, like our earliest memes on the internet have existed since like the 1980s with just like text images or just like phrases. The like term meme in terms of like internet culture was kind of coined in like the early 90s.
Wow.
And then the first like big viral meme, we usually point to like the dancing baby in 1998. with the Ellie McBeal stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all right. I actually remember that one, and I know what it was. Describe it for folks who may not be as internet savvy as I am.
It's a small computer-generated baby dancing to the the song. I can't remember the name of the song, but it's like, Ooga Chaka. I can't stop this feeling. You guys know that song. It's in Guardians of the Galaxy for all the young folks out there.
Fair enough.
I remember the dancing baby. The first one that I became aware of was the All Your Base meme.
Oh, right. Yes.
All Your Base are belong to us.
That that precedes it a little bit.
It does?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm old. Even older than you thought. This seems like a good, given all of the good origin stories you've just given us, it seems like a good time to say, this is what Know Your Meme does, right? You research memes and viral pieces on the internet and give us the like etymology. Memeology.
Ooh, good for you.
That's pretty much it. We research and archive and catalog and just trying to make the internet easy for everyone because not everyone has as much time to spend all day on Reddit and understand these things.
And just think, you get paid for this. All right, so let me go back to something we talked about in the introduction, the Bird Box meme.
Yeah.
So explain the conceit of that movie and then what... And I can't believe I'm if you don't know what the Bird Box meme is, folks, you will shake your head in dismay when you hear what people are doing. Go ahead.
Okay, so I have to admit something. I have not watched Bird Box.
No, neither have I, because it's scary, but that's a whole different thing. That's a whole different thing.
I heard it wasn't very good, so I didn't watch it.
But the conceit is...
Sandra Bullock is living in a post-apocalyptic wasteland with monsters or something, and if you look at the monsters, they kill you, so she has to navigate it blindfolded. Now, most of the memes consist of photoshopping her head onto people that aren't very observant, like a ref in a football game being like, where's the ref? Oh, he's blindfolded. Right. He's doing the Bird Box. The big problem with it came when people were doing something called the Bird Box Challenge, which is when they would try to do everyday things while blindfolded. And those everyday things include driving a car.
Yeah, because I can't even believe it. Sorry, wait. So the Bird Box meme is different than the Bird Box challenge.
We would classify them all under Bird Box memes, but Bird Box, like what we would refer to as like a Photoshopped image macro, is just basically the image of Sandra Bullock walking around blindfolded.
So I, I'm really glad actually that we dug into the challenges as a subgenre of memes because I have had a lot of questions about that. No, I'm totally with you. Like, is there a point, though, Matt, where we started to notice memes go from a thing that entertains you to a thing that drives an action? Because in the case of Bird Box, it seems like a lot of people started to have FOMO, you know, fear of missing out on what was happening in this movie, and then went and watched it as a result of seeing all that memes. And that just follows all of this kind of sponsored content stuff, the influencer part of it, branded content. Like, at what point... did people go, oh, we can use this meme to, you know, throw an election or make people watch a movie?
I would say, I mean, I think that memes in general require participation from everyone in order for them to become memes. So, like, that's baked into the bread, basically. If you're going to be a meme or make a meme, it needs to be something that can be changed and used in other ways. But in the form of, like, challenges or... how influential they can be, like putting stuff on YouTube. I would say like the big one of like the last decade that started all this is the Ice Bucket Challenge.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I did actually,
Oh,
because that was something that
everyone...
It was the ALS Challenge, right? It was the Lou Gehrig's disease challenge. Okay, so let's make that jump from that becoming like a societal thing and getting people to do things, and I get that we're going to kind of lump the challenges and the memes in together, I suppose, but... when did people realize they could start, they can make money off these things?
I mean, I would say that started, I mean, like the dancing baby, for example, didn't necessarily start on Ally McBeal. It was popularized on Ally McBeal. And like after that, it became such like a big cultural moment that I believe that they had like t-shirts and stuff like that, just like putting the dancing baby, like the dancing baby was everywhere. So as long, like, it's one of these things where if like money can be made, money will be made. So if something is so popular that it's on a network television show and there isn't exactly someone that can be credited for that thing, it's always going to be kind of used as much as possible before like someone says, hey, I made that and I've copywritten
right.
Well, that's a good place to turn to this idea of credit, because ultimately every meme is at its heart, at its core, someone else's content. The original photo or in the case of meme accounts, accounts and account holders that are basically making money off of reposting other people's memes. It mm-hmm. seems like this credit conversation is starting to heat up. Is that fair?
Yeah, it kind of comes in waves, it feels like, because the same people that are dealing with it today are the same people that were dealing with it 3 or 4 years ago. Same people are committing kind of like the same, let's just say, like social contract breaches that is annoying other factions of the internet and the entertainment world.
Where's the line, though? I guess maybe there isn't a line. I keep coming back to this egg, right? So this egg that was, is this like 10 days, 2 weeks ago, right? I mean, it was so recent, right?
I mean, if I had a dollar for every time I said, keep coming back to this egg.
So the egg, it becomes like the most, followed or liked or whatever the heck it is thing on Instagram, right? Mm-hmm. And it's literally a picture of an egg.
Right.
And now in the last week, it's become clear that since it's amassed such a large following, there are brands that are willing to pay money to be inside the egg when the egg picture cracks open. It's all you, I just, what?
Okay.
$10 million.
I believe it cracked last night.
Did
on
it crack?
The Super Bowl.
Oh, see, I'm
yeah,
so
I'm it was
so
an ad
the
for the National Mental Health Association.
Oh, good for them. I mean, that's great, but
yeah,
holy cow.
It was.
But essentially, the egg basically started as a way of puncturing kind of social capital.
Right.
They wanted to prove that just a picture of an egg could get more followers than, I believe, Kendall Jenner.
Right.
Who, I mean, I don't
Kendall
know if you...
Kylie or whichever one it is.
If you guys had seen the Fire Festival documentary, which also kind of plays into this.
Right.
Kendall Jenner's Instagram page is a great place for brands to sell content because... Right. One post from her is valued at something like $250,000 or some crazy number. So these kind of things happen every now and then where someone wants to show how easy or how meaningless viral content is that everyone kind of else on the internet kind of globs onto it. We saw it a couple years ago with the nuggets for, I think his name was Tyler. It's a boy who asked Wendy for, if I get 1 million retweets, will you give me lifetime of chicken nuggets?
Right.
And it follows this path of post on a corporate account, retweets, viral fame, the corporation response, you end up on Ellen. And that's the end of it.
God.
And that's the whole goal.
That's the path. You end up on Ellen.
I think it is Kylie. I'm looking this up right now.
It's Kylie. Yeah.
Oh, look at that. I knew two things. Come on.
I know. Look at you. Look at Kai trying to pretend that he was not all up in this information and knew it was Kylie all along. He was like, Kylie's my favorite. Are you kidding? It is funny how so much of it starts ironic and then gets real, mm-hmm. like the AirPods thing, right? Where it really actually seemed like people were just making fun of people who wore AirPods for looking so tooly. And then pretty soon it was like, oh, no, actually, you're flexing. And now we all need them.
Yeah.
It's sort of a terrifying display of power.
The AirPods thing is really strange in that, I thought that when all those AirPods memes were happening, I thought that it was going to spark kind of a backlash towards AirPods where people would not want to be associated with flaunting their wealth. But I guess I was wrong.
Yeah.
They're very popular.
Turns out people never get tired of that.
Nope.
So look, let me ask you this, and this is necessarily serious and will come across as downbeat, and I guess maybe I mean it to be that. What are we supposed to do with this?
What are we supposed to do
because
we're living with it.
Well, so there are these things that have been created and are created every day on the internet. Mm-hmm. The vast majority flame out and go nowhere other than, the creator's two or three buddies. But every now and then, one of them catches on. And it catches on in a way that changes our politics, it changes our commerce, and it changes the way we think about the internet. What are we supposed to do with this?
Well, I mean, I feel like those are the type of things that you have to take on a case-by-case situation, what kind of damage they're causing or what kind of good they're creating. That is kind of where our website, Know Your Meme, kind of comes in. We hope to make sure that these memes have proper credit and are sourced, and so people can look at them and see where they came
mm-hmm.
from.
Mm-hmm.
So that way they're not necessarily sharing images that they might not want to be sharing, possibly promoting political messages that they don't want to be promoting, and knowing exactly what it is they're saying on the internet.
So do you spend like 10 hours a day just on the internet?
I mean, I spend my work day on the internet.
And then you're home at night and you spend your night on the internet?
I try to do less and less when I'm not online because so much of my day is online.
Yeah, for sure. I am,
as we describe in the home, terminally online. So I try to create boundaries. Like I deleted Twitter from my phone to kind of like give myself a little reprieve because 8 hours a day is enough. I've had it off my phone for about a month, and it's been pretty good. I haven't gotten rid of Instagram, so I can keep following meme accounts. So I still have a shoe-in when I'm off work.
Yeah.
And yeah.
All right.
I want to ask about this is also maybe a little bit downbeat, but I know that...
Welcome.
I'm wondering if an existential threat to the meme economy is in the works here. I know a lot of creators are worried that the UK's new copyright laws, especially this law called Article 13, could effectively outlaw memes. Like, increasingly, we're seeing moves towards saying, you know, anything that gets uploaded to a certain platform has to be checked against a database of supposedly copyrighted content, and that could just cause people to stop doing this altogether. What do you think about that?
Well, it is concerning, especially in my line of work, that something like that could happen. But I generally think that the internet is creative enough to find new ways. Like, every time a new platform is created, every time a new app for social sharing comes out, a new genre of memes emerges. So, you know, the next time, you know, like there's an application called TikTok. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it. So TikTok is a lip syncing application that is used so that you can make short form music videos. And over the past, let's say 6 months to a year, it has become a meme generator akin to something like Vine. So we're seeing new forms of video memes that have nothing to do with other social media apps. They're 100% their own thing, using the tools that TikTok provides them with. So I think that when one thing shuts down, another thing's just going to take its place.
Huh.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, I don't think you can overstate the speed at which all of this moves. And I hope, I do not mean this to be offensive, but my son, who's almost 12, told me that once something shows up on Know Your Meme, the meme is over. Like, that's how fast in his mind things work. That he's just like, oh, once people know about it.
I'm not going to corroborate that.
It was just, it's weird.
But there is like a concern within Know Your Meme's like editorial staff that we are unwillingly a part of the meme life cycle. And it's something that we don't want to be. We want to be outside of it. But once it is on Know Your Meme, that does mean that the meme in question has reached a level of internet saturation that it is worthy of an entry. But I would say that when it hits Know Your Meme, if it is a big deal on the internet, we are going to see visitors for months after it has kind of died in the creator space.
You should hire like 12-year-olds to keep you ahead of the power curve.
I meet someone's little cousin, I ask him what are kids playing these days, and they're like, I'll ask him, are people still playing Fortnite? And he's like, nah, Fortnite's dead. And I'll be like, oh my gosh.
You're like, that's so funny because everyone's still on it.
It's dead. They just don't know it. Matt, thanks a lot. Matt Shimkowitz at knowyourmemes.com.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Matt.
Share your favorite memes with us. Do it at makemesmart@marketplace.org. Send us a voice memo with your thoughts. We'll get you on the pod, maybe, and we'll see how it goes. All right, we're going to go to a break. Matt, break. We're going to go to a break. Matt's going to get out of the studio, and then we'll keep going. Matt, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes every Sunday wherever you get your podcasts.
So it is technically time for the news fix portion of this radio program, the podcast, whatever it is. I'm caught betwixt two worlds, and I don't have anything to say, Molly.
I do, and it's totally on topic.
Okay, all right.
Actually,
oh, you just put
I
that
have a
in
fixation.
There.
I,
you literally just put that in there while we
I'm
were
sorry.
Talking. This
I did.
Is so lame. So
yep,
the way it's supposed to work is before we get into the studio, we're supposed to put in the rundown our thing that's our fixation of the week. And I usually forget, but sometimes I mostly get it in there. Molly's always very prompt. And now she just totally snuck one in there, which is some kind of BS. Man.
I know. I just added a link while he was ranting about it, too. I just threw the link in so he can get prepared. Well, it made me think of it, actually. It's funny because I was talking about it all weekend long, and then this made me think of it, which is that this weekend on Saturday night, I let my child stay up until 11 o'clock Pacific time to watch because he wanted to participate in this live marshmallow concert in Fortnite.
I'm sorry. You're going to have to explain
so,
that.
Let me step back.
Okay.
Do you know who Marshmello is?
No.
Okay, good, because I bet other people don't either.
Yes.
Marshmello is a DJ, like an electronic music producer. He has a song called Alone, but the one you've probably heard on the radio is the collaboration with Bastille called Happier.
Yes.
I want you to be happier. That one. It's going to be in your head all day if you know anything about it. So Marshmello held, I think on Friday was the first one, a concert in Fortnite. So a virtual live event that people could all watch simultaneously. And then they like disabled all the weapons and you'd go in as part of a battle royale and you'd watch this concert. It was like a live performance.
Sorry, was it actually real life video or was it computer generated cartoonish characters like they are in Fortnite?
Cartoonish characters like they are in Fortnite.
You.
So
That's
you would go in with, as your avatar. Yes.
Gotcha.
And this marshmallow avatar performed. Yeah,
gotcha.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then played the music and stuff. And it was like a big, you know, in-game virtual stage and all the stage effects and stuff. And it was so popular that they did an encore on Saturday night, which is the one I let Eli stay up, my son stay up to watch.
Yes.
And I watched it and it was amazing. You know how like sometimes something happens in the world and you think to yourself, oh, this feels like a thing. This feels like a turning point. And that is how this weird marshmallow concert felt. It was, it made me realize that the future of social networking is avatars, which people have been saying for a long time. But this event was the first time I realized like, oh, we're close now. Because Fortnite has all this in-game dancing. They all have these little dance moves. So there's my kid's avatar and they're dancing and they're watching a concert together and they're jumping around and like typical concert things happen like the, well, not that typical. In one case, like the beat changes and as the beat changes, all the avatars fly. Like they basically get rid of gravity in the game. So all the avatars start flying around and then they're just like, ah, and my kid's like on the phone with his friend and they're watching together and, but it's basically like watching a concert. They're all dancing together at a concert and something like 10 million people watched it concurrently, which is amazing because it was at 2 a.m. Eastern. And then all these other people streamed it on Twitch. And I just realized that so many, like Fortnite itself is a social network. Like we just, when we talk about the development of things on the internet, right? We put it still in the context of what Google or Facebook or Instagram are going to look like. And watching this event happen and the way my kid responded to it was like, oh, no, 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 no. It's going to look like this. Just add a little virtual reality to this. And I thought when Facebook bought Oculus that that's what they were thinking is like, oh, the future of virtual reality is this avatar life where
Oculus
you hang out together.
Oculus is this big virtual reality company, right? They got the headset and everything. So
yes.
Yeah.
But all that Facebook's doing with it so far is developing video games. And I just realized how far ahead Fortnite is. And then you know what my kid did immediately after the concert was over? He went and dropped 3 weeks' worth of allowance on that marshmallow avatar so he could have one for himself.
Wow, $3 worth of money.
It made money.
Wow.
$30.
Wow.
It made money. It was a big deal. Like, mark my words, that was some sort of a turning point Okay. It was a big deal.
All right, we're going to timestamp this. We'll be back in a year. Okay, we'll check it out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Trend alert.
Yes.
Email us if you let your kids stay up to watch the Marshmallow concert, or if you have thoughts on memes or Fortnite or the future of social networking, tell us your favorite meme. MakeMeSmart@marketplace.org is our email address.
There we go.
Hi, Kai and Molly.
This is Brent in Detroit.
This is Rebecca from Baltimore.
It was great to hear comments on my question about GDPR.
I wanted to put in my vote.
I want to discuss a slightly different but maybe related thing.
Favorite thing, slightly different but maybe related. Go.
Favorite thing. Last week, Kai said that college is for growing up. And Will Turner from Houston sent us this voice memo about his experience of going to college and adulting.
I went to Texas A&M, started in 2003. I started late, so I felt like I was surely an adult, but I paid for it myself. So I spent a lot of time, of course, on the financial aid website. And it frustrated me to no end that the default landing page, financialaid.tamu.edu, was the parents' login page.
Yeah.
I think you know why.
Yeah, totally, right? It's, look, yeah, college funny. Finances, man, it's bananas.
It's not always for growing up. Yep.
that's right.
Sometimes Fair it's enough. For grown-ups.
Fair enough.
But I'm bummed.
During the government shutdown thing that we did, I said, and I think I still feel this way, but anyway, so I said I didn't understand why young people would want to work for the government right now for a whole lot of reasons. Debbie Kane sent us a voicemail. She said her husband works for the federal judiciary, was affected by the shutdown, but her older daughter works on Capitol Hill, was not because the latest legislative branch was fully funded. But she would still encourage her younger daughter, Debbie said, to go into government if she wanted to, and here's why.
I'm self-employed, but once worked in corporate advertising and marketing. I've been laid off twice, the result of corporate downsizing, and experienced much more job turmoil in the private sector. Save for this most recent shutdown, my husband's job has been more stable than mine. And I can't say that what I was doing was contributing to the greater good of our country.
Well, now, hang on. I mean, economic growth via the corporate sector is good for our country, right? Let's just lay that out there. I would also really love to hear from the husband about morale right now in his slice of the federal workforce. Just saying.
But that is remarkable that of her family members, two out of three work in government, and she still is like, nah, do it.
Totally.
All right.
Totally.
Good perspective.
Yeah, for sure.
Katrina Jones is a federal employee working in Washington, D.C. She sent us this voice memo reminding us who the shutdown continues to affect.
No, I was not affected by the government shutdown, but I really want to highlight the many contractors who were affected and will not receive compensation. From those that work in our cafeterias to those that maintain our buildings and keep us safe. The shutdown was horrible in every way.
Yeah, it totally was. So look, there are 4.1 million federal contractors. Not all of them were affected by the shutdown, but it was a mess for them. And let me just give a shout out to our morning show, the Marketplace Morning Report. They had about 10 days ago, maybe a week ago, a couple of first person narrated stories, self-narrated stories, of contractors who were affected by the shutdown. One was a young single mom, I think, and then another one was a 71-year-old woman who's a custodian in a museum or something in Washington. Crazy. It's bananas. And those people, at least so far, are not getting back pay. And it was horrible, as Katrina said, in every way for them.
Wow. Yeah. And continue. I mean, that's going to reverberate for years for those people. Yeah.
Now, to the Make Me Smart question, which is kind of what we're all about. What is something you thought you knew, but you later found out you were wrong about? Ray Charlton sent us this one.
I thought I was pretty much like everyone else for almost my entire life. Then, 4 years ago, with the help of my younger brother, I realized that I am autistic. I have Asperger's syndrome, or as they call it now, autism spectrum disorder. Now I know where there were parts of my life and episodes in my life that I was just clueless about. All these years, I knew that I was missing something in my daily interactions with people, but I just thought that if I would or could pay more attention, I would be able to figure out what was going on. Turns out, no matter how much attention I pay, there will always be things that I will not be able to comprehend or understand.
Wow.
It's a good one to share.
You
I
know,
like that one.
Yeah, that's really remarkable and wonderful. And thank you for calling us, Ray. And it also, I think, speaks to this larger idea that there tends to be, especially on the internet, an assumption that people are like computers, that they already know everything or they know how to. I mean, I even do this as a parent,
I'm
like
totally
assume that my kid knows how to do something and is choosing not to. And I think it speaks to the idea of the benefit of the doubt, you know, like it's not fair to assume that that a thing is known or that it's like a muscle that's not turned on. It just might not be there.
Totally true.
Yeah, that's great. Keep them coming because, as you can hear, they make us think a lot. What is something you thought you knew that later you found out you were wrong about? Email us your answer at makemesmart@marketplace.org. And we have a special announcement before we go. Next week is our 100th episode of Make Me Smart. If this were TV, we'd like legit start getting paid because we'd be syndicated right now, which is not how it works.
But let me just say that's not how it works in podcasting. That's right.
But we're just going to pretend like it is.
Yes.
We're super excited. We're going to have a little baby celebration, and there will be goodies. I know I teased this a tiny bit last week. I'm going to tease it again this time. Be sure to tune in next week.
Please. Please.
Please.
Please. All right. I'm waiting.
Please.
I'm waiting. There we go. Make Me Smart is produced by Shara Morris. The senior producer is Eve Tro. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. This week's program was engineered by Drew Jostad. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez.
The executive director of On Demand is Sitara Nieves, and the senior vice president, just in time for the dancing part.
No.
And general manager is Deborah Clark.
I can promise you, were she here, she would not be dancing. Deborah Clark would not be dancing. Also, for like the umpteenth time, this is a test to see, whether she actually listens to the end. Oh, there it is. All right, there we go.
And that there is the end. Tell us which part of our show you would meme.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.